Good afternoon, everyone. The subject of today's class is taking refuge, and taking refuge specifically in Dharma. What does that mean? How do we actually experience that vow in our lives, and how might it benefit us and everyone around us? I'm going to start by reading two different versions of the refuge. Of the refuges, the first of the three bodhisattva precepts, the first three of the bodhisattva precepts. I take refuge in Buddha. This is my own true nature. I take refuge in Dharma. This is the reality of all existence. I take refuge in Sangha. This is the community of intention and awakening. I take refuge in Buddha before all being, immersing body and mind deeply in the way, awakening true mind. I take refuge in Dharma before all being, entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. I take refuge in Sangha before all being, bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrance. So these are the refuges that we are discussing. This is called the triple treasure in Buddhism. Somewhere I've read that Suzuki Roshi said that in order to really practice Zen Buddhism, you have to adore the triple treasure. And I love this, love the use of the word adore, because it means that we practice mind and body. Whole life, whole heart into our practice. As we've done before in this class, I want to bring up today the question of refuge. What exactly does the word mean? As many of us know, the word refuge comes from the Latin root that means to fly back to our home, to fly back to our true home. Our true home is the awakened mind, the awakening mind that we all have. To awaken to the awakening mind is taking refuge. The word refuge has many synonyms: harbor, shelter, sanctuary. And I also think it's useful to recognize that we all have many ways that we already do practice the practice of taking refuge in our lives. Some of those ways are salutary, wholesome ways, life-affirming, such as taking refuge in our families, in our friendships, in our work, in activities like artistic or athletic pursuits. And there are also many destructive refuges that people use. Things like addiction to substances or addiction to doctrines. And there are more subtle refuges that may not be so helpful, such as the habitual thought patterns and emotional patterns that we may get so used to that they feel comfortable to us, and in some ways, like home. The Buddha awakened to the reality of no self, impermanence, and the interconnection of all things. He taught his followers, who include us, about the true reality of our life. His teachings are called Dharma, and the reality itself that he teaches about is also called Dharma, or the law of the universe, or reality. When the Buddha died, his followers were bereft. They remembered that the Buddha had said that when you look at the phenomena of the world, you see him. So they took comfort in this. In Buddhism, this is called the Dharmakaya, or the Dharma body of Buddha. When we speak of taking refuge in Dharma, we mean taking refuge in the Buddha's teaching of reality, and also in every aspect of that reality itself. Here's a poem I'm going to read by the 11th century Chinese poet Su Tung Po that speaks to this. Su Tung Po spent the night sitting up through the night, breathing the cool air next to a river. and wrote this poem. The voices of the valley stream are the Buddha's long, broad tongue. The form of the mountain is nothing other than his immaculate body. All through the night, I hear 84,000 verses, 84,000 sutras. Tomorrow, how will I tell them to others? Dogen comments, "These mountains and waters of the present are the manifestation of the way of the ancient Buddhas." Su Tung Po hears each unique splash and ripple of the mountain stream as itself a sutra. Also, the birds chirping and the sun shining on the mist, on the water, everything happening all around us and within us are sutras teaching us the reality of being, of impermanence, interdependence, and non-self. The sound of the valley stream is his long, broad tongue, Buddha's metaphorical long, broad tongue, preaching, teaching the Dharma that nothing lasts, everything is always changing, there is no fixed ego. And we take refuge right there, in the constantly flowing stream of our life. There is no other place. Also, we notice when we are missing the message, those many times when we might not be hearing the lesson. This is also part of the flow. In Buddhism, we have the word Tathagata, which comes from Sanskrit and Pali, and is generally translated as one who has thus come or one who has thus gone. It is an epithet that refers to the Buddha and is also translated as thus come one, or one who understands things as they are, or things as it is, as Suzuki Roshi has said. Sometimes Tathagata is simply translated as thusness or suchness, referring to the river of our rapidly passing fugitive experience itself. Since things are nothing but this constantly changing flow, here is where we must turn to find refuge, to take our refuge. Dogen, in his early essay, Fukanza Zengi, or the Universal Instructions for Zazen, tells us, if you want to attain suchness, practice suchness without delay. In other words, right here and right in this very moment is where and when we have to turn to find suchness and find our true life, true self, true nature. The first step in the Buddha's Eightfold Path, his guide to the end of suffering, is right view. How do we see the world? What's our attitude? Right view means correct understanding, the wisdom to see the reality of non-self. In other words, the path to what we call true nature actually begins with the knowledge that we already have the wisdom that we need. It's built in. If right view was not already in place here in our hearts, it wouldn't make any sense for right view to be the first step on the path. The Buddha's advice to us is that we can't count on others or on anything outside of ourselves, that we always depend on Dharma, rely on our true selves. Everything and everyone, including ourselves, is always changing, always unstable. This very reality of egolessness and impermanence is itself the foundation of our lives. No self and impermanence are the only possible stable foundation for a peaceful life, and this is our only real refuge. Everything else in life is conditional. In this poem, Su Tung Po illustrates the two uses of the word Dharma. Once, in the way we just spoke of, as the Dharma meaning all of existence, teaching the real truth of the universe. And he also refers to the Buddha's long, broad tongue, the tongue being a way of speaking or articulating words to convey the teaching. And he asks at the end of the poem, "Tomorrow, how will I tell them to others? How will I teach others what I have learned?" One way you might say to teach others what you've learned of the way things really are is by how you conduct yourself in the world. Your behavior, your very behavior is your teaching. And also, like Su Tung Po, you might write poetry to convey your understanding. Or if you are a 2,500-year-old lineage like Buddhism, you will leave behind libraries full of sacred texts to read and study, texts that we take refuge in. We have the good luck to have these texts to take our refuge in. We study them, do our best to understand them. Thereby we assimilate and digest them. They become part of our minds. This, of course, is exactly what we're doing here in this class, studying the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. I would suggest that it might be an excellent practice to memorize some version of the precepts. Memorization is a practice that in Buddhism goes all the way back to Buddha's cousin Ananda, his attendant, who is said to have memorized every word the Buddha spoke. We all probably know the power of memorization, which might help replace some of the usual mental scripts that we might have going on in our minds, replace some of those scripts with something more beneficial ideas and thoughts about being ways of being in the world for others and for ourselves. I'm going to end with a poem by the Irish poet David White. "Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone, as if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely, even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish, you must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and invite you. And the tiny speaker in the phone is your dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and seen the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves, are unutterably themselves. Everything, everything is waiting for you." Myself, I feel very familiar with the psychological posture or attitude that I'm alone in the world, separated, walled off from the outside world and its people, that there are no witnesses to my private thoughts or feelings. In this kind of experience, one is a lone fighter for what one can get from the world. This is a tragic point of view. Much better it is to ease into the conversation, as the poet says, to practice receiving the world allowing all things as they are to be unutterably themselves, then we have the opportunity to swim in the ocean of Dharma, meeting each being, true nature to true nature. Thank you very much for listening.